When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said. Done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Today's episode of Real Talk with Zuby is brought to you by our sponsors, OZ Lifestyle Brands. OZ Lifestyle Brands care a lot about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both casual and classic designs. They also make shopping really easy for you. You can just go check out their website, ozlifestylebrands.com. They've got a fantastic selection of watches, wallets, t-shirts, and other accessories, especially designed for men with ultra-discerning tastes. OZ is for men who have found their calling but don't feel the need to shout about it. So I recommend you go check out their full range of products over at ozlifestylebrands.com. To let them know that I sent you and to get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout. That is ZUBYMUSIC, Z-U-B-Y music, at checkout to get 20% off your entire order at ozlifestylebrands.com.
Sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to another episode of Real Talk with Zuby. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking to another artist. She is based out of Detroit, Michigan. She recently hit the headlines in a couple different countries, in the U.S. news and in Canadian news as well, for pulling out of a festival where they were doing something a little bit crazy with the ticket prices, but we will get into that. Tiny Jag, I would like to welcome you to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. I am doing very well. Thank you so much for having me today, Zuby. I appreciate it.
That is all good. Always good to talk to another artist. I've done a really brief intro there, so why don't you tell the people a little bit more about who you are?
Okay, so yeah, I'm Tiny Jag. My first name is Jillian. Either one is fine. But I am a rapper, singer, songwriter from Detroit. I have been producing music at this level and taking it this serious for about a year and a half now, maybe about 18 months now. Mm-hmm. I have headline shows here, as well as Chicago and Austin, Texas, as well as New York. Had a lot of fun, done a lot of shows, upwards of like maybe 60 shows in the last year and a half. So had a lot of fun. And I'm ready to get it figured out.
That's awesome. So how would you describe your music to somebody who hasn't listened yet?
Dual is the word I like to use quite a bit. Because on one hand, you get that just undeniable, just like rage sound. That is just very electric, very alive, very purposeful, aggressive. But at the same time, there are principles that are coded in that music. There are things that are very close to my heart coded in that music. It's just wrapped up in a very expressive way that is able to be a therapeutic outlet for me. And it allows me to be peaceful on a regular basis that I can let it out like that. So that is definitely what it is for me, a very cathartic medium for me that just so happens to be therapeutic for those who listen to it as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting talking to you right now because, you know, I can tell you're a very chilled, measured, amiable person. In the music, though, there's definitely like an underlying tone of angst or aggression in there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So you talked about the overall message and the substance you're putting out there. I mean, I'm a rapper myself. I know how hard it is. I never ask someone, what do you rap about? Because I know it's
right.
I know it's an impossible question to answer. But I'd say your overall message You might have an answer to this, you may not, but would you say you kind of have an overall message that you want to put out to the world?
Due to how big of a, and big is just a lack of better word, due to how just impactful of a decision it was to decide to do music full time because it was true to me, my message is always about following your heart in so many different ways. So whether it is in situations relevant to today, like inclusion and things like that, being yourself, being able to be yourself unapologetically in any room, in front of any group, within any community, being able to own that and just have agency with your existence. That is like a huge message for me. And underneath that umbrella, there are tons of other things as well, as far as women's empowerment and health. Honestly, I'm really big on getting health into the Black community, for sure, for sure. So there's a lot of that. Same with just like sustainability, even there, you can find that in the music. You can find all types of things, but they're all about one, me making sure that I'm staying true to me and being and talking about things that I want to talk about, and hoping that that message sends that same idea to those that are listening.
Yeah, that's dope. I love that.
Thank you.
I think in hip hop, one thing that people always say to the point of it being a cliche is be yourself or be authentic or keep it real. Keep it real is really the main cliche one, but
yeah, absolutely.
Funnily enough, I feel like in the world of hip hop and rap, at least in the modern sense, I think that's actually pretty rare. I think that keeping it real almost has two meanings. I think by real, some people kind of mean like hood or gangster or
keep it street.
Street. Yes. Yeah, so, you know, they kind of use it as a metaphor. Right. Whereas to me, real means, you know what, like if you are, if you're not that, then it's not real to say that. And, you know, I mean, I imagine most rappers, certainly these days, are not necessarily coming from that kind of background. You know, I think if, I don't know, Drake came out and was, you know, rapping about gangbanging and selling crack, you know, it would be like, that would be like, wait, hang on,
but that's
not his background. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, same with myself. You know, it's weird because I have people who on one hand are always like, you know, who love me for my realness and my authenticity, because I'm very open about my background and where I'm from. I've never lived in the hood. You know, I've had a relatively privileged upbringing and I'm totally cognizant of that. And I don't pretend in any way, shape, or form to be like out, you know, gangbanging or coming from growing up in the streets and, you know, trying to get my mom. I'm like, I can't talk about that because that's not my story. So from the very beginning, I was like, I'm not going to try to portray myself as anything that someone can do a little background check on me and be like, oh, hang on. No. This guy's not what he's saying. But then on the other hand, you get people who say, oh, no, that's not real because he's not rapping about that street stuff. And I'm like, that's not where I'm from.
It's not real for me.
No, or with me, even with my accent, because I'm from the UK, but I didn't grow up here.
Gotcha. So,
yeah, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. I went to an American school. Yeah, so my accent, as you can probably hear, it's somewhere between American and British.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'll get people here in the UK who are like, oh, like, Zuby's not real. He's trying to be American. And I'm like, I didn't grow up here, man. Like,
man.
I sound like me. I'm not going to sound like, you know, Stormzy or Skepta or some other London rapper because.
And why do you want me to? From. Why do I have to sound like that to be real?
Yeah. It's very strange, man. Very strange. So tell us a little bit more about your background and growing up.
Okay. Yeah. It's all over the place. Like all over the place. When I was born in Detroit, but right away, we were living in Hamtramck, which is actually a small town inside of Detroit. Like it's surrounded by at all angles by Detroit. It's the oddest thing. It's only about 2 miles wide. But it's right inside of Detroit. And then from there I moved to the east side of Detroit so when I was born, I lived with my mother, her mother, and her mother's husband.
Okay.
So my mother is a biracial woman. My grandmother is a white woman, and then her husband is a white man.
Okay.
So although he wasn't my biological grandfather, he was the only grandfather that I knew. Mm. So at that time, my background as far as being raised is my mother and then those two, they all lived together. And that was until I was maybe 5 or 6. They moved to Kentucky and me and my mother moved to Detroit from there. Mm. So I was spending maybe like 3 months out of every year out in Kentucky on the farm, which was very, not a culture shock because it started happening at such a young age, but was very different from home. You know, I'm playing with the kids on the block at home, and I'm going out to the country where there's not another house for a mile this way, a mile that way, you know, and I'm spending my day helping my pawpaw bale hay, you know, feeding the cows and the chickens and the goats and everybody, you know, I'm doing that type of stuff. But then I'm coming back, you know, during the school year to the block, you know, but I'm in private school. So that's another element. So I'm in private school. I live on the block. I live in Detroit, but I got my country family, my white country family that I go feed the farm with in the summer. So I'm like all over the place with it. Very seasoned early. And then I went to, we couldn't afford, my mother couldn't afford the tuition anymore for at the private school. So she wanted me to still have a good education. And at the time, because of all of the economic disparity, Detroit, the schooling is just not what we would want it to be. It wasn't then, it still isn't now. At least there are more eyes on the issue where hopefully we'll be able to move the needle in the direction that really, really matters. But it wasn't an ideal opportunity if we had any other options left. So it was actually more affordable for my mom to get us something small in the suburbs, so I could go to a suburban public school to get the education. And so then we moved to the suburbs, and I graduated from high school in the suburbs before I went away to college. In a small community about 2 hours away from here, where I gained even more knowledge, and just tolerance is a big word I want to use. Tolerance and an understanding for things that are different around me, as if all that other stuff didn't open my eyes to plenty. But all of those experiences together, I would definitely consider very influential elements to my background for sure.
Okay, no, that's awesome. I mean, I think I think there's a lot of parallels there. Not everybody gets the opportunity to see it multiple different places and cultures and interact with lots of different people from a young age.
Absolutely. And I'm so grateful.
I think it's one of those things that I don't want to make a sweeping statement, but I think you can tell when people have had that, and you can kind of tell when they haven't.
Absolutely.
Like where I grew up, I mean, literally from preschool, you know, I was surrounded by people of every race, every ethnicity. You know, I was in Saudi Arabia. They had Brits, Americans, Canadians, Arabs from the whole, like all the Arab countries. You had people from South America, Japan, China.
Wow.
And so, you know, literally from the age of 3 or 4, like all my classmates, all that, you know, and even the different religions growing up in a Muslim country. I myself am a Christian, but you know, as you just, one thing that really hits me hard about these current times is that it's weird to me when people start playing lots of these identity games or identity politics games and whatever. The whole thing's really weird to me because I've always grown up without that being a thing.
With a lot of tolerance.
Yeah.
Yes, just tolerance going on.
Yeah. Around. It's just not being a big deal, you know, hanging out with other black people or white people or Arab people or Muslims or, you know, it was always just whatever. Like my circle of friends, it's just whatever. You know, there's no point really using the term like I don't see race, because obviously I have eyes. I can see what people visually look like, but it doesn't tell me anything beyond that. You see what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. It doesn't influence how you feel.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems really weird that there seems to be this like push, and people call it progressive, but I'd say it's anything but. There's this kind of push to fall back into these factions where it's not just Zuby talking to Tiny Jag. This is a black man talking to a black woman. It's just like, it doesn't matter. If I'm talking to a white guy, I'm not speaking to him as a white man. I'm just talking to whatever his name is, you know. I just don't see the world that way. And I get a lot of criticism for it. Like, I mean, you may have already seen on Twitter in the very short time, you know, we've been interacting. Like, I get all this. It's very strange. And I'm just like, what's going on here? So while we're on the subject, let's get to the meat, which I'm sure a lot of people are going to be anticipating, which is the issue that recently arose with this festival. You're local to the story. You were involved. You were going to perform. So why don't you just run us through the story?
Okay. So I had a fellow artist that I had done a couple, or maybe not even a couple, but we had a business relationship. He had done some work for me, and he had asked if I would be willing to do a show with him and his friends. And this would have been in April. I agreed because, as I said, no problem. We had exchanged services before. That was not a big deal. He said it would be in July, and that was the bulk of the conversation. Mm-hmm. In August, in July, I received a direct message. I received a DM from a third party with a flyer with my face on it, with a location, a date, everything. I had not received anything since that April conversation, especially not from this third party. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even make the connection. And I originally responded that I'm not even on this show. You know, I don't even know what this is. Mm. And I checked with my manager, like, did you guys book me for something? Did you guys forget? Like, what's up? And they're like, no, we searched the emails, everything. And it was like, no. So I'm like, I don't even think I'm on this show. And they asked, like, well, did you speak to that original artist? And I'm like, well, I talk to him all the time, but not about this. But I ended up agreeing just off the strength of that relationship I had with him mm-hmm. to support the event. And that was that. They sent over the promotional materials and I began to promote the event. Up to 48 hours later, I got a screenshot from a white friend of mine who planned to come to the event. And when she went to buy her ticket, she saw that there was an early bird option for $10 for POC and $20 for non-POC. And the screen that she originally sent to me did not have a description beyond that necessarily.
For anyone listening who's not familiar with the lingo, POC is person of color, aka non-white.
So from there, I gave them the benefit of the doubt. Mm. And because there was no description, and although I knew what POC meant, I'm like, no way, because I've never seen anything like this. So, and I knew nothing about it. And there was no way I would assume that something like that would be going on. And I'm an artist on the show and I wouldn't know. I reached out to the curator that had sent me the promotional materials and, you know, just asked for some clarification. Like, what does POC mean regarding ticket sales? And I didn't get an answer right away. And I was definitely triggered in the moment for sure. So I called that original, that fellow business relationship artist. I reached out and talked to him and he said he was unaware of that. Okay. And so now it was looking really interesting. Mm. So that curator ended up reaching back out, explaining that the discrepancy was to try to give Blacks the opportunity to patronize an event that they may not be able to afford, and keeping non-POC individuals with a closer proximity to wealth from buying all the tickets before any people of color would have, or Blacks would have any, would have an opportunity to purchase their tickets. Mm. I just immediately said I couldn't support the event and that I would like to be taken off all promotional materials. And then I issued an apology to my fans because I did support that event for 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
So I issued an apology to my fans for anybody that may have been triggered because I knew I was. Yeah. So it kind of just, there was a whirlwind from there. I started receiving a very intense amount of hate from, and don't get me wrong. I definitely had a couple other things to say too. I was upset.
Yeah.
But
you can say them on here.
Okay. I might've made a hypothetical situation where if somebody were to ever charge my grandmother double anybody else in front of me, that somebody might be getting beat up and it wouldn't be her. Okay. You know what I'm saying? But again, it's hypothetical because my grandmother's late. She's not with us anymore.
Yeah.
So, a hypothetical thing to really express just how I was, though.
Yeah. I mean, I'd imagine, obviously, given your background and your family structure, which you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I mean, for you personally, that must have been, I mean, I saw it and I was like, I mean, I'm obviously not a white person, right?
But right,
I was like, this is offensive to everybody.
Man.
This is, you know, this is both implying that creating this idea that like POC equals poor to begin with, or that, like, you know, me as a Black person, like, why I can't afford to pay the extra $10, or right, you know. And then obviously to a white person, it's like, wait, I'm being charged double here. What's going on here? Yeah, it's just one of those things that they certainly didn't think it through. But
I think that's
on
where I am now. So, but mm-hmm. yes, so I did had a couple things to say other than the apology. But as soon as the apology came out, I started to get quite a bit of backlash from initially the local Detroit music scene and an art scene, which is what caught the attention of the local press. Our local press, at least the Metro Times here, they do support me as an artist.
Yeah.
And they have for a while. And so, but they did just organically catch wind of the hate just because there was so much, and it's never happened before. I'm typically a very admired artist just because of my views.
Yeah.
But so it was, yeah, it shocked them. And so that was where the press began. And
what was the hate? What was the criticism being levied at you?
That I was protecting my white side and using my white privilege to dismantle what was going on. I was standing in the way of something that was fighting for equity for the Black community. Mm. I was ignorant to what was trying to be done. I was ignorant to the message. I'm Macoon. Wow. I've been a lot of things. I've been a mulatto. I've been a lot of things lately. But yes, I was essentially that I was caping for the white man is basically the umbrella of where all of this was coming from, which is just.
Was this your first time experiencing that kind of thing?
Zuby, I tell you what, absolutely. Like, I haven't even experienced anything close to this from my Black community. And it's so interesting because the night before, literally the night before all this popped off, I did like a 4, maybe even 5 hour interview with a zine that, and I am so sorry if she's going to kick my butt, but it's called Ofe Watcher. And it's because the young lady that writes the zine is talking about holding white people accountable for the microaggressions, for the things that hurt Black people as a fellow white person, as a white ally. She is writing about the microaggressions and different things that people of color deal with from non-people of color. And it's just a very just honest, this here are my experiences type thing. Mm-hmm. So the whole day before, I spend 4 hours talking about these uncomfortable circumstances I've been in because of the discrimination from non-POC, all of this stuff, just to wake up the next morning and be called a person who's caping for, like, it's not even, it's just not even that type of thing. So it was very, 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 I was floored. Like, I was absolutely, I was very enlightened, not only about how people feel about this situation, but definitely how some peers feel about me. And yeah, I didn't expect so many people to, the amount of individuals that I saw that agreed with it is what was so eye-opening to me, and something that I do see as a silver lining, because with my message, I may have been wanting to start it. I wasn't going to start it there. I was going to start it somewhere else. And now I realize I have to come meet my people here and start from here. So that is, it's actually a tool. It ended up being something that I am definitely going to be able to use so that we can induce some real positive change. But it was a tough learning curve, Zuby, man. What? Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, right now you're talking to someone who's, you know, over the past couple of years, who's been accused, called everything you've just said and beyond multiple times.
I've been checking you out. They come for you.
Oh my gosh. I've been called a Black white supremacist. I've been called, some stuff I don't even want to repeat.
I heard that.
I've been called, bootlicking Uncle Tom.
Man, I had to look some stuff up. I had to start looking stuff up. But I don't even know what
to do. You know what I mean? And the things that have caused this have been me saying, you know, I'm trying to remember the first thing that ever caused this. I think like in early 2018 or late 2017, I said something about the ongoing demonization of white males that I see, you know, in the media, in music, in Hollywood, all this whole thing about just people trashing, you know, I don't know, whether it's the hashtag white men suck hashtag, or, you know, or like just people just saying, you know, all these flippant comments and just, you know, white men this. And I'm kind of like, wait, hang on here. If you're against discriminating against people based on their race or their gender or whatever, why are those people who are claiming that's what they feel, you're just then going and doing the same thing? So that's kind of like what I saw with this ticket thing. With any situation, I've got a very basic rule. I apply the same rules to everybody. I try to treat everybody fairly. I don't care what direction it's coming from, who it's being aimed at. If someone's being racist, someone's being sexist, like, I will I will say something, you know, not just like, oh, it's cool if I do it, but you know, they can't do it. Oh, I can do it. They can't do it.
Only
it's
right. Like,
that's not how it works. I mean, I just reverse the terms. So I think, okay,
right.
If you replace the word white with black, how would this sound?
Does anyone cringe?
Yeah. You know, if there's a music festival, I don't know, there's some rock music festival going on in Tennessee, and they're like, okay, you know, white tickets are $10. If you're black, if you're Asian, $20. And I know some people will jump in now and go, hey, man, that's not the same. But the thing is, to me, I'm like, no, that's the same.
Again, everyone is saying, well, we are facing it because we're facing it systemically. Like, we're facing it on an institutionalized level. And I understand that. But then we need to fight it at that level. We're not going to be able to do these very small grassroots, radical to a fault type things and actually want to be able to dismantle anything. It's not progressive, in my opinion. And it lacks, like you said, it lacks thorough thought. It lacks thinking it all the way through. It lacks the big picture. It lacks the goal. It's very right now. Yeah, it's very like, let's make some noise for this event right here, right now. Mm. And, you know, we'll just take whatever consequences go with it. So, I mean, I guess that is definitely what's happening at this point.
Yeah. So you talked about receiving some criticism and some hate, but I'm assuming you've also had tons of support. I mean, I've seen support pouring
absolutely
out. I've had people,
and it's
even
getting
when
more
I,
now.
You know, because initially when I posted the thread with the screenshot, I didn't expect it to go, I mean, over 3 million people saw that. I did not expect it to go remotely that far. And then after it started going viral, I actually realized that I hadn't mentioned you because I initially heard the story because you'd obviously taken that stand. And I was like, oh, crap,
right.
I need to give this lady a shout out.
Thank you.
And, you know, even get her on my podcast because
I appreciate it.
You know, I kind of came back later because over the weekend I was I tried to take Sundays off Twitter, but it was the whole thing was like burning up over the weekend. So I couldn't really completely detach from it. So I wasn't really on there. I kind of checked in and was like, whoa, what's going on? This thing is catching fire. So what's the support been like, actually? What's the support been like?
The support has been like, there's so many things that we could have predicted. So of course I'm getting support from people that I wouldn't even be near to start. There's some people that are very hateful people, but want to try to, you know, tweak and modify this story to fit their agenda. So we have a lot of people that are racist to Black people that just are thrilled about the division right now.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. So that we get that. Of course, it's bottled up in just you go girl. But as soon as I click on their page, they're the most hateful people I've ever seen. So I have a lot of that going on. But I do have just genuine, like, to be, I'm going to tell you my favorite supporters are right now. And not to say to discredit any others, but they're the ones that touch my heart. And they are the mothers and the grandmothers of the biracial babies that are so worried about the life that their biracial babies are going to live.
Mm.
That is who touches me the most, because they're looking for a sense similar to just the Black woman, similar to the Black mother. Every day we're looking for something that will tell us the kids are going to be all right. You know, every day we're looking for something that'll give us a sign that the youth is, that the young adult generation, as well as the children, are moving in the right direction and will be able to make positive change and be safe and be understanding and have tolerance and all those things. And so to know that even if just for that day, I was that thing for those moms, grandmothers, whoever, that were worried about that, like, wow, you are giving me hope for the fact that it might be okay.
Yeah.
That is probably, like, goodness sakes, because it just makes me think about, I wonder if my granny was worrying about that stuff. Like, I wonder, you know, how many times my mother worries about it. I wonder, I'm not a Black mother right now, but I don't wonder, honestly, because I kind of don't want to imagine it. It's painful, but I know that there's so many mothers of color that are worried about their babies. So that was very touching to know that on behalf of these babies, that their caregivers are feeling, their guardians and caregivers are feeling some type of positivity from just something that was innate to me, something that was like, you know, that was just a natural reaction to me.
Well, you know, you'll find that you'll get a ton of respect and are getting a ton of respect simply for having principles and living by them and not bowing down to the mob or the criticism that will come. I mean, I've reached the stage where I've, you know, I've given up any hope of appeasing certain people because I'm just like, you know what, like that ship sailed so long ago for me now that I'm kind of like, look, I'm just going to be Zuby. I'm going to say what I say. Some people are going to like it. Some people won't like it.
Man,
some people are, but it's like nothing can be thrown at me that hasn't already over the course of certainly the past 2 years. Especially in the world of music, you know, people are very quick to bend the knee or pander, or as an artist, you want to be liked, right? You know, you create art, you make music, you want people to like you. You don't want to have conflict and enemies and all that kind of stuff for the most part, especially, I guess, amongst people who you feel are part of your community, whether that's geographically or, you know, however people draw those lines. In the US, people use the term a lot, like the Black community. It's not really a term I use myself because I don't think there is a Black community per se, but I think maybe on a local level. But when people talk about the whole US Black community, I'm kind of like, is it really a community? Like, that's not what the word community means to me personally. So I don't use the term because how many million Black Americans are there, you know, right. And they're all different individuals with different views, different experiences, different things. So I don't like this whole idea of just categorizing them as a block.
That's a good point, because like, I think it leaves room for ambiguity like this, where it doesn't leave room for that variance in views.
Yeah, exactly. Because you'll do this and then they'll say, oh, you're not standing for the Black community. And you're kind of like, well, you're a Black woman and you're standing for what you personally believe in. Like, that doesn't mean every other Black woman or every other Black man is going to agree with you. But it's like, well, why should you?
And just me being a Black woman standing in what I believe in is me standing for the Black community.
Yeah.
But just doing that alone, whether anybody else agrees with it or not, living in my truth is empowering to my people.
Yeah, it is.
If we would all do it a little bit more, we would be in a better place.
Yeah. So, and then you can have the conversations, you know, if people think,
man,
you know, what the weirdest thing with a lot of this stuff is you'll find that people jump straight to epithets and insults.
Oh, man.
Okay. I mean, I completely agree with your position, right? But say somebody who didn't, it's weird that they would just jump to accuse you of something or call you a bad name or call you some kind of slur or maybe even something racist, rather than say, oh, that's interesting. Why did you make that decision? What was your thinking process? What are your views? You know, in which case, I think if you express them, it's quite glaring. I mean, to me, it was very glaringly obvious off the bat.
Right.
Like, I didn't need to like look into it. It's like, because that goes against my principles. Because my principles, like I said, doesn't matter if it's Black on white or white on Black or
Jewish or Asian or whatever.
No, exactly. It's, you know, but I do have, but you know, I've got white people in my family. You know, like my sister, two of my sister-in-laws are white. And, you know, obviously some of my nieces and nephews are, you know, thus absolutely mixed race. So, and it's like, I've been over the race thing since I was like two. do you know what I mean? Like, I've just been over it. Like, people drag me into this conversation and that one. And I'm just like, really? Like, I don't.
It's heightened. Yeah. And I mean, for good reason, but it is definitely an exhausting conversation for sure. But it's like you said, it's necessary.
So talk to me a little bit more about the situation in the US, because I'm obviously here in the UK and I've grown up in a whole different part of the world. And I think that the view on subjects like this between the UK and the US, I think, is pretty different. And I guess some of that is expected given the very different histories of the country. So in the US, it seems like there are far more racial boundaries in general, or racial delineations, even like people identify with their race more in the US, and people talk about race a lot more. It's a much bigger, it's just a much bigger deal there. Whereas in the UK, it's not something that is really, people delineate more along, say, class than race, right? So in the UK, you might hear people more talking about like working class and middle class and upper class, but not so much like white people, Black people. What, you know, it's more of a class distinction. So that's one of the big differences between the UK and the US. But I mean, what's it like for you say in Detroit, or what are your thoughts on that whole situation in the wider world?
I say one of the main things I want to point out is that it has changed over time. I remember when I was younger, it was always something that it was kind of right in there with like religion and politics. It was something that you kind of try not to talk about, just to keep peace or what have you. And over time, because of things that have changed, current events, the media, our actual ability to access news and things of that nature. And then also just so many different things have now made it to the point where we're talking a lot more about race, whether we feel as if, whether we've done anything to find out anything about it or not. Everybody definitely has something to say about it because it definitely is something that touches everybody. There's nobody who's unaffected. So it definitely has become more of something that people will bring up very nonchalant over time, though, for sure. It was something that we kind of was, it was a little bit more taboo to bring those things up. But I think that change is necessary just because of those conversations that we do need to have. We need to know where we are. We are only going to get where we want to go if we know where we are and if we know where we've been. We put a lot of focus on where we've been. Mm-hmm. And that's a good reason too, because a lot of us were taught one thing where we're learning now another thing was the truth, and we're learning a history that isn't necessarily ours on top of the fact that we had a lot of our history taken from us. So it's just like, I think that these conversations are necessary. I'm happy to be having them. I do think we need to be more tactful with them, more sensitive with them, more tolerant, and just more understanding. The touchiness hasn't gone away. Just because we're doing it more frequently and at the dinner table and stuff like that doesn't mean that it's not just as triggering. It's not just as touchy. And that because we haven't been talking about it for so long, we need to understand that there are plenty of areas where we could be ignorant. Yeah. So overall,
do you think it's good that it's becoming more of a hot topic, shall we say? Or do you think it was better when it was less spoken about?
It's hard to say because with the good comes the bad, but I would say it's good. It's the only way we're going to get somewhere that we need to go. We got to get this stuff out. Even if it's just to get it off of everyone's chest type of thing, even if it's a therapeutic thing so that people can see clearly, that's necessary. But I think it's even bigger than that. It's for that. And then from that does come the actual change. That's where, how we get the needle move. We have to talk about it, figure it out, come together, move the needle. Yeah. So I think it's necessary, especially at a socioeconomic level in conjunction with the race, because that is how we will get, like I said, that's how we'll get our agency. That's how we will get our power. That's how we will be able to claim our space and not have to do stuff like this to do so. You know, we'll be able to have that pride. We'll be able to have things that are just true to our culture and be expressive about it without feeling triggered by the sight of something that is different than us.
Yeah.
So I think it would make us, again, like I said, which is a huge message of mine, more unapologetic about who we are, whereas we wouldn't even need to put anyone else or obligate anyone else to do anything in the conversation or in the event or in the anything. We don't need to put those types of obligations on other communities or other races or anything like that, because we got ourselves so sewed up and we're so on the same page and we're so strong and ready to pour into ourselves that we don't even need to make that distinction. It's not even necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, it's one of those big topics where I don't want to say I land myself in hot water, because I quite like hot water. So I tend to jump into it, but I know that I have a lot of unpopular opinions when it comes to a lot of this stuff. Anyone who knows me is familiar with that, but it's always interesting for me to, you know, I'm a big fan of conversation. It's why I have a podcast. It's like, absolutely, why I like to talk to people from, you know, people I agree with, people I disagree with, people from all sides of the political spectrum, different countries, different places, anyone who's got an interesting story, because it's all about, you know, just hearing those different perspectives. I mean, I've always felt that it's weird with me, again, because I'm in the UK. If I talk about stuff that's happening in the US from my own perspective, sometimes people criticize me just because, hey, you're not Black American, so you can't even talk on this. And I'm kind of like, well, I can have an opinion on,
and we need it. We need it all.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I could have. So, you know, the way I look at it is sometimes it's easier for someone to see a problem actually if they're not so close to it, right? If you're standing a couple inches away from a painting, it can be hard to see, you know, what picture is this. But if you're looking from afar, you're like, ah, okay, I'm not emotionally tied up in this thing. I'm not historically tied up in this thing either, you know. So I can look at certain things and be like, oh, okay, well, I think that that and that is a problem, and I think that that and that is, you know, potentially a solution. And
right, it gives you opportunity to tell the artist you might have missed a spot over here while he's all close to the painting.
Yeah,
but we don't need the artist to say to then decide, well, I would rather act like I meant to do that than give you the opportunity to tell me that I missed a spot. That's the disconnect. You know what I'm saying? We're artists that are like in the midst of us coming to each other's aid, like, hey, this ain't hot. Mm. It's like, no, it is hot though. It is, like, but it's not though. Yeah.
So charging different ticket prices based on skin color is not hot.
It's not hot.
That's not hot. That's not, that's not the way. That's not the way. I can so, kind of sort of see what I think you were trying to do.
You know what I'm saying? And that's facts. That's no. Serious. And I need that known. Like, I understand the goal. I understand all of that. And I'm down with the goal for sure. But it's cool. I got some stuff for us. I'm going to put some stuff out that'll really give us some just some knowledge on some opportunities that we have that, you know, don't discredit like who we are. Like, we gods out here. I'm not trying to discredit any of that. Like, I'm really trying to make sure that our God self, like, we are in touch with our higher power, and we got to keep it funky to do that. We got to keep it a buck. We got to keep it 100. You ain't never seen no hate work. Like, you ain't never seen that work. So if you look at it for like an aura, and let's say that now and before, so when Blacks are being oppressed now, and even at a higher level, you get this, let's say you get this crazy orange and red and Black aura. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's say that, you know, we decide we're going to do something that parallels that energy. Even if the group that does it to us stops, that aura in the universe is the same color. Mm-hmm. How are we going to get any change in the actual, how we're moving, if the actual energy that consumes the space that we take up is the same? Mm-hmm. That is beyond me. You can really take your shoes and socks off, stick your toes in the mud, and get better answers. Mm. If you just ground yourself for a second, feel the breeze, you will understand that ain't it.
Yeah.
That can't be it.
Yeah. I mean, from an outsider perspective, and I've thought this for years, I think that, again, I don't like to use the term Black America because it sounds so, you know, I'll use it because other people use it. Okay. Black America, the Black American community or whatever. I feel like, you know, someone out there will get angry at me for, you know, for saying this, but that's probably the point.
Right.
I feel like people need to acknowledge and understand the history, but move beyond it. I feel like people are dwelling and wallowing in the past. You know, even people who haven't grown up and lived through any of the horrible stuff that happened over the past couple hundred years, you know, maybe someone's grandfather or great-great-grandfather directly was oppressed by certain people who are no longer alive, and, you know, but it's just like those grievances and that tension and that anger at some point, people like justified anger. So people almost like to hold on to it because it's like,
absolutely,
you know, it's like this thing that you can kind of weaponize in a way. And, you know,
it even
like
has a sexual energy to it, which is why you get like people get addicted to it almost.
Yeah. And I just feel like, look, you know, because people always like, oh, you know, but what about the history? Oh, you don't understand this. And I was like, no, I understand it. Like, I know what happened. Right. I know what happened in the past. But at some point, as an individual, as a wider society, I just feel like you need to kind of draw a line in the sand and be like, okay, like, let's look to the future. Okay,
right. And from here, we just use it as knowledge and power, not as
what can be done now. Not how can we reverse this and do the same to other people but be like, okay, look, this is where we are now. These are some things that are affecting us internally. These are the things we're doing to each other, which we need to cut out and stop doing. And anything that's, because I look at it like this. I mean, I had, do you know Candace Owens?
Yes. You
familiar with her? Okay. Well, I was on her podcast on the weekend.
Okay.
So yeah, you can imagine I'm getting some interesting, a lot of love and a lot of criticism both.
Oh yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, one thing I said with her is, imagine if you could completely eliminate all the racism in America overnight. You click your fingers, all the racism in everybody's heart, every race, it's all gone. Okay. Are these problems still going to exist? And the answer is yes. So people spend a lot of time focusing on racism or what people might call white supremacy or this or that. But it's like, if you get rid of all that, the majority of these problems still exist, right? Young men are still killing each other in Chicago and in Baltimore and in LA, and like, oh, stuff is still going on, right? So the focus needs to be on fixing these internal problems,
right?
Rather than always pointing externally and saying, oh, you know, well, this happened to my ancestors, or this person's ancestors possibly did this, you know. And it's like, I don't know. It sometimes it frustrates me because I'm just like,
right,
just, people just need to just move on from that thing. Like, you can dwell on it forever, but the past, you can never change the past. The past cannot be changed. It's immutable.
Right.
It's there. You can say, this was bad, this sucked, this go-. You can learn from it and be like, okay, let's not repeat any of those things again. Let's not do any of that again. And let's look to the future. How do we build bridges? How do we make things better? How do you make yourself better as an individual, as a family, as a community, as a town, as a city, as a country, all that. And that's kind of always where my head is at. So whenever people try to personally kind of like drag me into that dwelling on the past kind of thing, I'm always like, yeah, I get it. But, and also just switching to being more gracious and having more gratitude. I mean, a question I like to ask people is, do you think you had it worse than your grandparents? And very few people can say yes to that. If you live in this modern era, you're living in 2019, you're in the USA, you're in the UK, you've got food to eat, you've got water to drink, the electricity works. I'm like, dude, you're better than 98% of the people, right? I'm like, 98% of the people in the world will switch positions with you. In fact, they're trying to cross the border, go across the ocean. They're trying to do all kinds of things to get to where you are geographically.
Okay, while we speak about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, again, I think maybe that's just having that more global perspective of
it's
being
important.
Able to think like,
it's
yeah.
It's important. I wish it was seen as an asset more often and looked at as knowledge and experience and not as, oh, you've been in close proximity to those types of people. That makes you less of one of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, I got some things I can say. Yeah. I got some things I can tell you that you don't know about because you haven't been in those positions.
Mm.
And I hate that I have to say that. I thought that went, yeah, I thought we were good on that. I thought that was just a given, you know, you want to have as many varying perspectives within your objectivity as possible. So it can actually be true objectivity. Mm. Like I thought so.
Yeah. And another one is, you know, I mean, wherever you are at the end of the day, you've got to live with people. Right. You're in a country of 350 million people. I'm in a country of 65 million people. And it's like, you've got
to
get on with each other, whether, you know, so whether it's along racially, politically, social classes, sexes, sexuality, I'm like, look, you've all got to live with each other, man. If you're, you know, in the UK, you've got, so obviously, I think 2016 was obviously like, sorry, it was a world-changing year in many ways, because obviously in the US you had Trump's election, in the UK you had the whole Brexit thing, right? The whole leave vote. So, and the way that just kind of fractured and splintered certain people to me has just been crazy, because I'm like,
it's been crazy.
Yeah, it's been crazy because I'm like, you don't want to ever be in a position where you're demonizing like 50% of your fellow citizens, okay? So if someone normally votes Democrat and they just think, all Republicans are evil. Everyone who voted for Trump is this. Everyone, I'm like, dude, it's not like that.
That's a huge amount of hate to have to maintain in your own spirit.
If you think like over 100 million people in your country are just these like evil, I'm like, dude, that's not, firstly, it's factually incorrect. because some of those people might even be your friends and they've just been quiet about it. some of them are, you know, with your friends at school. Some of them, you know, those are the sort of teachers, like, you know, pretty 50-50 on a lot of these things.
Absolutely.
So I've never understood this idea of just wanting to, I guess I understand it in a way, but I think it's very silly and short-sighted to take this approach of just trying to silo yourself. You know, I'm just going to interact with people who look like me, think like me, believe what I believe, act like me in certain ways and whatever. It's like, yeah, sure, associate with those people, absolutely. But you also want to be reaching out and trying to understand other people's perspectives and, you know, going to different places, meeting different people. And I think if you do that, I mean, I know with myself personally, having been to 30 something countries and 100 plus different cities,
it's
most people are cool, man. Like, most people are cool. Just talk to people, engage people as individuals.
As individuals.
And you'll find that, oh, okay.
You'll meet a lot more decent people than you will.
By far.
Indecent.
Especially if you approach people with kindness. If you approach people with hostility,
absolutely,
you're going to get hostility back. It doesn't matter if it's online or offline. If someone just jumps into your Twitter mentions right now and is like, tiny jag, you know, your automatic reaction is going to be defensive. You're going to want to defend yourself. You're going to, maybe if they call you something mean, you're going to want to call them something mean back. Whereas if they're like, oh, hey, no, and you're like, oh, cool, thank you. You know, that's not.
Yes. It's even at a chemical level. Your body starts leaving out particular, you know what I'm saying? You get different things in your bloodline and your bloodstream when you feel those different things. So it's even at a biological level, we're making people feel different types of ways before we're even giving them a chance to show us who they were before they felt attacked or before they felt intimidated by your aggression or the narrative you're trying to push before you even introduce yourself or whatever the case may be. So those things, I mean, reactions are serious. We have got to start moving in a way that, like I said, tactfully, because that reactionary stuff is more detrimental. If we would have been thorough and tactful with our approach, a lot of the time, like I said, we'll run into a lot more decent people and decent reactions for sure.
Absolutely. So what is next for Tiny Jag?
Well, right now, this has put a huge rush on something that I had planned for a little bit later. Okay. But I am using this opportunity to make sure that I really sensationalize the ideas that I have to put equity and agency and financial stability into our community for marginalized groups. Because I see now it must be either a lack of options that we thought we had or something. So I am not going to catch word of this and not share what I know. I would have shared it much earlier if I thought we were in this condition. So I'm definitely putting together content that can be fun and engaging and still definitely tap those things right on the head so that we can get to these places that we're trying to go and that we hopefully eventually can come back together. Because I do know, I don't know them very well, but these girls were not like complete strangers. You know what I'm saying? So I do.
Is this the organizers you mean?
Correct.
Okay.
So I do hope that eventually, you know, we'll all be able to understand what happened, where to go and all of that. But right now I'm big on the awareness because, like I said, I didn't even know this was an issue at this level. This was very eye-opening for me. And then just kind of getting together with the people that are close to me and my family that work with just like social work and children and anything like that. I used to be a child. I used to be a peer educator as a teenager, where Teen Hype is a youth organization that I was a part of. It is local in Detroit. We used to just go out and educate our peers on navigating just at-risk situations. So whether it be through any type of art, we did a lot of acting, a lot of dancing, a lot of shows, a lot of just lectures. But we went to a lot of DPS school, all of DPS schools, Detroit Public Schools, and made sure that we tried to connect with the youth about these things from a peer level and not from a guardian or from a, you know, a position of power down to, because I know the ears, it doesn't always lay on the ears properly when it's coming from mom or it's coming from teacher or whatever like that. That's so true. I was a part of that. And then as an adult, I was a child advocate through social work, getting children ready for court and things of that nature, if abused children of Wayne County, which is a county that we live in, that Detroit is in, getting them ready to fight for justice for themselves, unfortunately. So this stuff is close to my heart. And I also, but I said all that to say that I have resources. I have a lot of resources because of those positions and others, but those are probably the two I was most instrumental. And those resources, I plan to rally them up as well so that we can definitely use this as an opportunity to show what we could do and what we have could have always been doing and what is already going on and things that we can support that don't alienate anyone and that don't cause this type of rift in the goal.
Awesome.
Thank
that
you
sounds
so
beautiful,
much.
Man. Awesome. Awesome. I'm just looking at the time. We're coming up to an hour. So why don't you let the listeners know where they can find and follow you online?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Tiny Jag, tiny, like small jag, like Jaguar, J-A-G. I'm Tiny Jag on Instagram. I'm Tiny Jag on all your streaming platforms. That includes Apple Music, Spotify, Tidal. Some stuff is on SoundCloud. I have stuff on Deezer. I know that's popular in like France. So yeah, all your major streaming platforms, YouTube, I'm Tiny Jag on all of those things. The only thing I'm not Tiny Jag on is Twitter. I'm Tiny Jaguar.
Okay.
Hopefully I maybe have made enough noise now that they'll give me my name and not the person that only tweets once a month.
Oh, okay.
But I am Tiny Jaguar on Twitter, but Tiny Awesome. Jag on everything else.
Where did the name come from? Last question.
Yeah, Jag is my initials, actually. J-A-G.
Okay, okay.
And Tiny, I used to date a producer, and for some reason, my first name, Jillian, he used to put small Tiny Jillian. He used to call me that all the time. And for some reason, the Tiny stuck, and we threw it on Jag. And it was that as a moniker for me, because I also own a juice business. I'm also trying to get fruits and veggies in the hood. So,
oh, nice.
So it was really a moniker for just my position in the conscious community in Detroit. Mm-hmm. But it ended up being my musical moniker once I got back into the music as well.
Awesome. Tiny Jag, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Zuby, man, I could cry. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
You're most welcome. I respect you massively. So keep standing up for what you believe in and keep
thank you.
Speaking out.
Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Through meaningful dialogue and guidance, Benign Images help storytellers of all types tell the stories they have a need to tell. Whether it's through simple editor services, consulting on story structure, or helping creatives to set up an effective work habit, Benign Images works with creators to help them become better storytellers. You can go check them out and start your project with them today by visiting their website, benignimages.com. That is BENIGN images.com. Go check them out. Become a better storyteller, whatever project you're working on. That's benignimages.com.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.